So reading from Canto 10, chapter 23, and the text for today is text 7. So you can chant that responsively. Gashareyanta bhavidura odanam. Ramachatrutau volas. Sato bubushikto Tayodvicha odanam artinoryadi Shraddha chayo yachita dharma vitamaha Gascharayantav avidura odanam Rama Chuto Vo Lasato Bubukshito Tayodvija Odanam Ati Noryadi Shraddha Chayo Yachata Dharana Vitamaham Gascharayanta bhavidura odanam Ramachyuto vo lasato bubukshito Tayodvija odanam artinoryadi Shraddha chayo yachita dharma vitamaha Okay. The word for word. Ga, they're cows. Charayanto, grazing. Avidure, not far away. Odanam, food. Rama Achyato, Lord Rama and Lord Achyuta. Va, from you. Lasataha, are desiring. Bubukshito, being hungry. Tayo, for them. Dvija, O Brahmanas. Odanam, food. Artina, begging. Yadi, if. Shraddha, any faith, cha, and va, on your part. Yachata, please give. Dharma vittamaha, best knowers of the principles of religion. Okay. So the translation to text 7 by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Lord Rama and Lord Achyuta are tending their cows not far from here. They are hungry and want you to give them some of your food. Therefore, O Brahmanas, O best of the knowers of religion, if you have faith, please give some food to them. Purport. The cowherd boys doubted the generosity of the Brahmanas, and thus they used the word Bubukshito, meaning that Krishna and Balaram were hungry. The boys expected the Brahmanas to know the Vedic injunction, Anasya Shuditam Patram. Anyone who is hungry is a fit candidate for receiving food in charity, is the translation. But if the Brahmanas would not recognize the authority of Krishna and Balaram, their title, Dvija, would be taken to mean merely, quote, from, born from two parents, close quote. Dvi, from two, ja, born, rather than twice born. When the Brahmanas did not respond to the cowherd boy's initial request, The boys addressed the Brahmanas with a slight trace of sarcasm as Dharma Vit Tamaha, quote, "O best of the knowers of religion," close quote. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlaka Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamlam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaguna Gana Ragutan Ragunatam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radha Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vanchakalpa Taribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaham. Jai Shri Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Rama Paraswami Iti Namine Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So it's an extremely quiet day in the temple after the very dramatic yagya, which had many attendees yesterday. It's emptied out somewhat. So... I'll read the translation once again for text 7. Lord Krishna and Lord Achyuta are tending their cows not far from here. They are hungry and want you to give them some of your food. Therefore, O Brahmanas, O best of the knowers of religion, if you have faith, please give some food to them. Okay. So... so... In looking at the commentary to this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he phrases the question asked by the cowherd boys as, please give us some rice. So very specific. The response of the Brahmanas is as follows, and this is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Here we're getting the request on the part of the cowherd boys in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur identifies as a very specific thing they're asking for, rice. And now here's the response of the Brahmanas. They say this, because Krishna and Balaram are not Brahmanas, we cannot give you until after the Brahmanas have eaten. So this is their response. So, so there's a request of the cowherd boys for charity to be given to them on behalf of Krishna and Balaram. So if one were to generalize what the purpose of charity is, one would have to say that charity is for the purification of one's heart. And if charity is given to suitable persons, it leads actually to advanced spiritual life. So it is very important to give consideration who the charity is going to. And so generally suitable persons are Brahmanas or particularly Vaishnavas. Because they're serving the Supreme Lord, so therefore the charity that's being given will be used in service to the Supreme Lord. So that's the suitable persons. Now, There's a lot of stress put on the importance of charity or giving in charity. Krishna makes a very strong statement in Bhagavad Gita where he says, acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even the great souls. So Krishna gives a reason why one is actually performing not only charity, but acts of penance, acts of sacrifice. Because even there's maybe a recipient of charity, but the person who's giving is performing, one could say, not only a charitable act, but there's some sacrifice involved. So now, this is from Bhagavad Gita 18.5. So this fact that one can't give up charity, it's something that Srila Prabhupada examines, and he uses this particular example. It's a very interesting example. Now, a sannyasi or person in the sannyas order of life within the societal Vedic societal division, he's actually particularly distinguished by the fact that he's disavowed himself from association with women, with members of the opposite sex. And but even though that's his position, it's not that he's going to discourage younger persons from getting married. And the reason is he understands that marriage will purify the young man. So that act of sacrifice has to be performed. And the person who's in a position, even though they are past that, they're still going to encourage the correct thing. You know, please get married, because they understand there's going to be purification that happens and the persons will come to a position of much greater renunciation. So they have to go through it. There's a proper sacrifice that has to be done. Now, in this particular situation, here we have, again, the boys are asking for charity, and Srila Sanatana Goswami, this is in Krishna Lila Stava, he actually glorifies Krishna for having sent the cowherd boys on this mission to beg, and to beg charity from the brahmanas who are busy performing a sacrifice. So it's an interesting moment at which the charity is being asked. It's to persons who generally, it's their duty to give charity. It's at the moment when they're performing a sacrifice, so it means that, you know, they should be fully attuned to giving charity. So very interesting, the timing. And Srila Sanatana Goswami, he's glorifying Krishna for having sent the cowherd boys at this time. And he gives the an explanation for why it is that Krishna encouraged the boys to go and beg charity. He puts it this way. This is quoting from Srila Sanatana Goswami. To favor the wives of the Vedic brahmanas, you stirred hunger in the cowherd boys. The words of your hungry cowherd boys gave you concern. Victory to you who made the boys beg food from the performers of sacrifice. So notice he puts an emphasis from the performers of sacrifice. So these are persons that are supposed to have elevated consciousness. They're already performing a very important act of sacrifice. Now, of course, one can also reflect that Lord Krishna has been very consistent, because he has said that acts of charity or acts of goodwill, because that's what charity is, it's goodwill. I mean, I bumped into, this happens to me, whenever I land up taking the subway and I land up on the Howard Street platform, inevitably somebody comes to speak to me, and a particular person came up to me and started to say how he had spent his day. So, of course, why persons choose to come and speak to me, but it inevitably happens on the Howard Street platform. Maybe I look very receptive, I don't know either. But this person started telling me that he had spent the day trying to incite persons to show goodwill. So it's in the Christian country that we live in. The time for being charitable is Christmas. So the timing is important when you ask for charity. So Christmas is the time. So this person had spent the day, all day outside, ringing a bell for the Salvation Army so that he could encourage persons to give in charity, to show their goodwill to those that are less fortunate. And he was obviously representative of that category of persons. So Lord Krishna is saying that these acts of charity or these acts of goodwill, this voluntary giving of some money or this voluntary giving of some food to somebody in need, it can't be given up. And in the purport, it's interesting, it mentions that the only qualification for somebody to receive food, and this applies to us here in the temple where often we'll get, you know, persons that clearly are in need because of some mental incapacity or, you know, some dysfunctional, I'm going to infer this, some dysfunctional upbringing that has brought them to a point where they're not able to care for themselves. So the only criterion that needs to be met is that the persons are in need. They can receive prasad and they can receive food stuff. Of course, if they're receiving prasadam, I mean, they're receiving the ultimate charity. So one can generalize and say that actually for the spiritualist, it's always something to be encouraged to follow purificatory processes because one wants to cleanse one's heart. And the cowherd boys, they were acting on the order of Lord Krishna. So, you know, we heard Lord Krishna saying it in Bhagavad Gita, you know, he's having a discussion with Arjuna, but here he's actually directly telling his cowherd boyfriends. So they're acting on his order to go and ask for charity. And this is what Krishna told them when he sent them off. This was his instruction. Please go to the sacrificial arena where a group of brahmanas learned in the Vedic injunctions are now performing the Angi Rasa sacrifice to gain promotion to heaven. So they had a particular sacrifice that they were performing. It was to improve their material condition. So he says to the cowherd boys, this was from earlier in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third verse, Sri Krishna says, please you go there. My dear cowherd boys, simply request some food. Declare to them the name of my elder brother, the Supreme Lord Balaram, and also my name, and explain that you have been sent by us. So they're actually being given what would be the word, a kind of protective way of asking for charity. It's not that, you know, they're on their own, they're saying we're hungry. You know, they're very, in a very cultured manner, they're approaching the brahmanas at the specific moment when they should be charitably inclined, and they're actually also referencing Lord Krishna and Balaram. They have sent us. Now, if one looks at it, we heard what the response was, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that they say, no, we first have to eat and then, you know, we can consider giving you something. So, now, this response of the brahmanas, you could say that it's correct in terms of an etiquette of the sequence in which prasadam has to be served. Let's say, I mean, we don't know, well, I'll come to that in a minute. There's a sequence by which prasadam has to be served. So this is how Srila Prabhupada puts it. In our Sankirtan movement, or Hare Krishna movement, We offer sumptuous prasad to the deity and then distribute the same prasad to the brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, and then to the people in general. So they had it correct in terms of the proper sequencing. After it's offered to the deity, in their case, the fire, which represents Lord Vishnu, then after that it goes to the brahmanas, then to the Vaishnavas, and then finally to the people in general. So it sounds correct what they've said. Now, there's another angle, however. This is the other angle. And this is how Srila Prabhupada puts it. One of the essential parts of deity worship is offering the Lord some very excellent foodstuff. It has to be super excellent. The remnants of what is offered, that super excellent offering, becomes prasad or the mercy of the Lord. So it undergoes a transformation. It's no longer, you know, the particular item, dal, rice. The cowherd boys were asking for rice or a vegetable prep or a puri. It's no longer that. It's actually literally been transformed into the mercy of the Lord. It's actually hold spiritual potency. It's undergone transformation by having been offered to the deity. So so after the Lord has accepted the offering, meaning the deity form, because the deity form is understood to be actually Krishna himself, present there, partaking of the food stuff. So in deity worship, one generally goes through the whole notion of asking the deities to take a seat and offering them water to clean their feet and their mouths and their faces. And then, you know, the offering is made. It's done very respectfully and very personally. So, so this other angle that I was mentioning, after this foodstuff has undergone the transformation and actually become filled with spiritual potency because it's carrying the mercifulness of the Lord to allow persons to elevate their spiritual consciousness. So the second angle is that it's first it's distributed first to the Lord's immediate associates. So on the altar, we first, after the deities have partaken of the offering, then it's offered to the spiritual master and the whole line of disciplic succession, because they're close associates of the Lord. So, and then it's offered to the Vaishnavas. So there's a whole elaborate, we have in the temple, whole elaborate transfer of the prasadam. So it's put into containers, it's very reverentially treated, it's brought for distribution. It's that one's literally carrying containers of mercy. I mean, it's so extraordinary. It's got so much potency. And so then it gets distributed to the Vaishnavas in generally, and finally any guests. So this is given in Pancharatra Pradipad, our book on deity worship. So it's very important to have an understanding to whom the offering has been made, because that's the beginning of everything. And and it's also necessary so that you get the sequencing correct. You know, there's a procedure. Now, if there's a sacrifice that's been performed for Lord Vishnu, which is what the brahmanas are doing, it means that Lord Vishnu is being worshipped. It's just part of every sacrifice. The sacrificial fire is seen to have Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is summoned to be within that sacrificial fire. So Lord Vishnu is being worshipped. And the pitta, I'm not sure what that means exactly, but that is how it was written in the deity worship book. So the Vaishnavas, they're worshipping the deities as Acha Vigraha, so they're incarnate forms of the Supreme Lord. And they're worshipping the Guru Parampara. Now, for the Brahmanas, this is the only thing that's spoken about in terms of the particular sacrifice they're performing. If the sacrifice, because their sacrifice is elevation to the heavenly planet, so they're propitiating the demigods, but there's no way that they cannot be summoning Lord Vishnu. But they're propitiating the demigods. And if they were performing that particular samskara or that particular sacrifice in the home of a priest, so we don't hear exactly the setting, if they were performing it in the home of a priest who's living outside of the temple, then that priest first has to worship a murti, a deity form, has to, or a shalagram shila. It's just part of any sacrifice. And he has to offer them something, some burger, some foodstuff. And then he has to give the full remnants to the Guru Parampara. It has to, it's just part, it's a standard procedure. So if the samskara was being performed, and we don't hear if it's like in the home of a priest, if it was being performed in the temple, so there's a structure there, then the pujari, he executes the regular artik. It has to be, the regular artik carries on for the deities on behalf of the persons who are looking to achieve something by that sacrifice. So the artik is done on behalf, let's say, of the brahmanas. So let's say it was being done in a temple setting, those brahmanas would then have to do the regular artik. The person, the priest performing the artik, is seeing it that actually it's on behalf of those brahmanas who are wanting to attain elevation to the higher planetary system. The beneficiaries, this is interesting, if it's done in a temple, the beneficiaries have to be requested to pay for the expenses. So that's part of what's being given. That's the sacrifice, part of the sacrifice, extra sacrifice. They have to pay the expenses. So this is just looking at, you know, what might be the setting and also what would be considered the correct way to go about it. So I've given two possible ways that these brahmanas could have gone about it. Now, the cowherd boys, they give their response to the brahmanas, and this is Srila Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur. He says, this is what they say to the brahmanas, but Krishna and Balaram are hungry. Of course you know the Vedic injunction. And they give the Vedic injunction, Anasya Shuditam Patram. And that translates as, food should be given to those who are hungry. So this is the main point that they're bringing. It's in that particular case, they are going through the procedure. They're summoning Lord Vishnu into the sacrificial fire. They've possibly had to pay for all the expenses connected to the paraphernalia, the sticks, the ghee, maybe the water bill for the Achman. They have to do all of that. And they're being requested, even in this situation, you're obliged to give charity to those who are hungry. The only qualification is they're being hungry. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Usually when you think of a fire sacrifice going on, there's a lot of mantras that are being chanted, and clearly there's a stream of a sequencing that's been followed. So one imagines there might have been a moment of interruption. So we don't know at what point in their sequence they were, but Krishna instructed the boys to go, so presumably it was right timing. Presumably they had a moment where they hadn't yet got going. That's what I'm assuming. I mean, it would not be correct if everything was in progress. So I'm presuming it hasn't happened, or the whole sequence isn't underway. And the boys are asking, and they fulfill the criterion for why they should receive charity. And now, there's an interesting commentary of Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book where he's looking at this particular request on the part of the cowherd boys, and he says that although the boys were village boys, they weren't expected to be learned in all the Vedic principles of religion or religious ritual, the boys are hinting that because of their association with Krishna and Balaram, they know all these aspects of religious ritual. So they're hinting, they know. So they didn't come there, blindly asking. They put it up right front that they qualified to ask for charity. They acknowledge the brahmanas as persons who know Vedic injunctions, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. And they also hint to the brahmanas, and this is Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, or Srila Prabhupada, sorry, Srila Prabhupada's point when he's writing in Krishna book, that they're letting the brahmanas know that they actually do know the Vedic religious ritual aspects. They do know. And this then brings us to, they address the brahmanas in a particular way. So they don't take the position that, we know everything. They take the position, and it's a very humble position. They address the brahmanas as knowers of all religious principles. So it's correct. Brahmanas are supposed to be attuned, and Lord Krishna told them that they know all the Vedic injunctions. They know it. So at this moment, the boys express the point of view that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Balaram were asking for food, the brahmanas should immediately deliver some without hesitation. They're expressing that view. It should be delivered without hesitation. And this is consistent, understanding Vedic injunctions, we can reference Bhagavad Gita where Krishna gives all the Vedic injunctions. one should perform sacrifice only for the satisfaction of Vishnu. That's the Vedic injunction. So Lord Krishna and Lord Vishnu have been, in one sense, the same personality in some sense. a sacrifice is being performed, that's for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. So why would one not be conscious that the same personality is now literally asking for foodstuff and then send it off by the cowherd boys? So there's some disconnect, clearly, on the part of the brahmanas. So there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita that explains this, that one should perform sacrifice only for the satisfaction of Vishnu, and that's this verse. I'm quoting, "In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, 'Be thou happy by this yagya sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation.'" So the means was given to attain liberation. So, and it involved being conscious that the sacrifice is for Lord Vishnu. Lord Krishna specifically states it. So if the brahmanas know the Vedic injunction, they have to be conscious. It's for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. So they can perform sacrifice, but they have to be conscious who is actually going to be pleased with that sacrifice. And Krishna says, thinking in this way will allow persons who are performing sacrifice that they'll have bestowed upon them everything desirable for living happily. They can be sure that they're going to live happily. So it just requires, being conscious. It's for Lord Vishnu. And that's from Bhagavad Gita 10. So, of course, there's certain significance to this point of view, and that is that Lord Vishnu is the Lord of all creatures. And he's actually also the owner of the worlds, all worlds, and all its beauties, they also belong to him. And he's the protector of everyone. So this is very significant. He actually protects everyone. So, in actual fact, one can say that the creation of this world is with the express purpose of enabling conditioned souls to learn how to perform yagya sacrifice for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. It goes along with being present in this world. You can't separate it out. And this is what allows one, while one is in the material world, to live comfortably, that sacrifice to Lord Vishnu, and without anxiety. And then it means that after one finishes the usage of this present material body, one can enter into the realm of Lord Krishna. So that's the, the direction given by Lord Krishna. That's the Vedic injunction that the brahmanas, as knowers of Vedic injunction, would have to be attuned to. Now, it's also spelt out by Lord Krishna, this point that they have to be attuned to the fact that sacrifice is with the express purpose of pleasing Lord Vishnu, because Lord Krishna puts it this way: the demigods, being pleased by sacrifice, and thus they'll also please you, and thus by a cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. So the demigods will automatically be very, very pleased that the sacrifice has been done with the purpose of pleasing Lord Vishnu. Automatically the demigods will be pleased, because they understand that Lord Vishnu is their master. So there's not a conflict there. So that's from Bhagavad Gita 3.11. So now, the satisfaction of the main personality, the Yajñapati, Lord Vishnu, it's the chief purpose of all yajñas. And indeed, when those yajñas are perfectly performed, the demigods, in charge of the differential aspects of the universe, where they're supplying different necessities, they're also very pleased to supply whatever's in their particular department to supply. So it means that there actually is no scarcity in the supply of natural products. I mean, I grew up in a country where there was no rain. Years would go by when I was growing up, and there was no rain. And it's an extremely uncomfortable situation to actually see, like, fires. One drives a little bit out of the city, and there's whole huge areas just on fire because it's so dry. And then anywhere else you look where there isn't a fire, it's black. So this would be in summer going on like that. So those sacrifices to Lord Vishnu needed to have been performed. And then automatically the demigods would have been providing, at least in that case, water. So so there wouldn't have been scarcity if that injunction, Vedic injunction, had been followed. Now, there are other side benefits too for performing sacrifice. It means one gets freed from being caught up in this kind of very dull material plane. It's and being caught up in the, like, no escape from one's mind, from the suffering of others, from the suffering of nature. I mean, it frees one from that. And also the other benefit of such a sacrifice to Lord Vishnu is that it purifies what one's going to eat. And it means that the foodstuff gets sanctified. And eating such sanctified foodstuffs means that one's whole existence becomes purified. So we were downtown the other night, New Year's Eve, and there was a big tray of cookies. So some persons were receptive to hearing about whatever the particular book was that was being proffered to them. Others may not have been, but in either case, they received some prasadam. So it actually will purify their whole existence, the fact that they bit into that cookie. So it's very dramatic. that intense suffering of like no escape from the suffering of one's body, one's mind, other persons infringing on one, all of that recedes just with taking a sanctified foodstuff. So, I mean, the benediction that persons receive from receiving one cookie is extraordinary. And it has like a long-lasting effect. Anytime there's a memory of having eaten that cookie, the same protection or protected feeling will be there. So it requires a little bit of reflection, but there's no doubt that that is what transpires. So, and another side benefit of performing sacrifices to Lord Vishnu is that the finer tissues of memory actually come to show themselves. So it's in the particular age that we're living, memory is pretty short. I mean, in previous ages, persons didn't have to write books. I mean, that is how strong the memory was. It was held in, held internally, the book. We have to externally put it on paper because our memory is so poor. So, and never mind, even if one memorizes something, you know, there's a kind of limited capacity. So the memory is not very good. But performing sacrifices to Lord Vishnu, it actually helps the finer tissues of memory just by going through that act. So it allows one to be able to think of taking this path of becoming free from all this material suffering. It allows one to think that way. The memory is so dull that one doesn't even question, is there something outside of the suffering? So, so just actually participating or being part of some act of sacrifice allows a person to start thinking of this path of freeing themselves from this terrible state of suffering. So those persons that were the fortunate persons who decided to dance a little bit on New Year's Eve because they were hearing kirtan, those fortunate persons who did pause to glance at the books that were being offered to them, those persons who chose to eat a prasadam cookie, every one of those persons, they're actually now that path has opened up to them to start at least the memories a little bit more refined, that they can think there's something beyond the dullness of all the material suffering. So it's a very huge thing, just participating in an act of sacrifice for Lord Vishnu. Now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he continues, he says, this is quoting him, seeing the Brahman as unfavorably inclined and not saying anything, they continued. So the cowherd boys, they don't get no response. And so the cowherd boys say, oh, Brahmanas, if you have any faith in Krishna and Balaram, then give. And if you do not, say no. They just, please give a definitive answer. I mean, it's very horrible to be ignored. It's probably one of the greatest insults one can do towards someone, not acknowledging the person. So it's extremely disturbing to any being to be completely ignored. And so they actually ask, if you have any faith, please give. Otherwise, just say no. So, and they say, and if you say no, we'll go back. And seeing, now they're reflecting, and they verbalize this to the Brahmanas, seeing you remain silent upon hearing our request for food, for Krishna and Balaram, the sound of those names causes the entire universe to melt with love. So we can understand that your being twice born merely means born from two parents. So they, I mean, it's the closest one could get to, you know, one could consider it an insult, but it's not actually an insult. It's stating a fact. They've been given every opportunity to give charity. They're choosing to completely ignore the cowherd boys. The cowherd boys are saying, you know, if you've got any little bit of faith, then just by hearing the name Krishna and Balaram, you know, one's heart should be melting with love. So, because it's not happening, you did hear the name of Krishna and Balaram, it means that you're just born from two parents. You've not, your consciousness isn't elevated, you're on the material plane. That's what they're actually saying to these brahmanas. So dvija is persons who've taken spiritual initiation. They're twice born, so they've become brahmanas. So they've taken on the responsibility to serve society in a capacity of performing sacrifices for the benefit of everyone. So it's a very elevated position. But here, the cowherd boys say, actually, you're merely born from two parents. It's like you didn't take a spiritual initiation or the Brahminical initiation. So this is a logical conclusion. Because the demigods, now they're the empowered administrators of the universe, working under Lord Vishnu, and they can offer benedictions for maintaining one's body and soul through the light, the air, the water that they provide. But their pleasure and their displeasure is dependent upon the performance of yagya by the human being. And if the yagya is meant to satisfy a particular demigod, still Lord Vishnu is worshipped as the chief beneficiary. It's always there. So so in terms of faith, which is what the cowherd boys were looking at, these brahmanas that are engaged in the worship of demigods, they're actually indirectly worshipping Lord Krishna, indirectly. And actually Krishna himself, he doesn't approve. He doesn't like this particular unnecessary worship of the demigods. He's not very fond of it. And he puts it this way. This is Bhagavad Gita 9:22. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. So, and that verse is Yepi Anya Devata Bhakta Yajante Shradavan Vitaha Tepi Mam Eva Kunteya Jayanti Avidi Purvakam. So, it's not getting the stamp of approval from Lord Krishna, their particular sacrifice, act of sacrifice. It can't be stopped, but there has to be consciousness who's the main beneficiary. And that's the mistake that's been made. So finally, and this is mentioned in the purport here, the boys address the Brahmanas with a touch of sarcasm. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur puts how the boys verbalize their sarcasm. They say, of course, you know the highest principles of religion. Dharma, Vitamaha. So what can we tell you about Dharma and Adharma? Vitamaha can also be taken as Dharma Vitamaha. This is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sorry, I don't know Sanskrit, but I'm reading how he breaks this down. He says, which means the ritualistic brahmanas were totally ignorant of religious principles. So the cowherd boys, they did a play on words. That was their sarcasm. So we're not going to tell you that you know the highest principles of religion. Actually, the word they use, you're totally ignorant of religious principles. So anyway, that's a short analysis of this particular verse. If there's any thoughts on this subject matter. Do you want to take this one and then we can swap? Doesn't sound like.
Back to you. Thank you for the class. What stuck with me a lot was just that simple phrase that just simply being hungry is qualification enough to be a recipient of charity. And it just made me think about like the dynamic of prasadam where like, we think like if we're stingy, like there's that kind of that mood of like, all right, well, if I give all these guests or if I give these people some prasadam, then there's not going to be enough for me. And there always seems like when you have that mentality that there's like, there's never enough, but somehow or other, like the by some mystical sort of way, like when you're always open to distributing prasadam and not being stingy with it, with in any case, whether it's prasadam or whether it's books, stuff like that, like there always seems to be more that comes back. Or even like, even with like money, with Lakshmi and stuff like that, and you think like, all right, if I give like $50 in the hundi, then like, what am I going to have? I'm not going to have anything and I can't pay my bills. You'll think like that, but it's somehow or other, like it always works out well that like whenever you give in charity, especially on behalf of Krishna, then there always seems to be just enough for you or a surplus of you. So Krishna always takes care. So I was thinking about that.
And thank you for your reflection, Damodar Smaran. That was particularly the point that there's never shortage if those acts of sacrifice and charity and penance are performed. There's actually never shortage. And that applies even to persons that are worshipping demigods, but of course, they may not be conscious that they're indirectly worshipping Krishna, but still they benefit. I recently got exposed to someone who worships Goddess Durga, and the purpose of the worship is good health and prosperity. So different penances are performed, like, you know, fasting on for particular days, or eating once a day. Somehow there's this whole knowledge of demigod worship. So I'm not familiar with it. I didn't grow up in that culture. And when illness was there in the family, some, you know, devastating illness, then the family members were leveling criticism at the worship. Oh, but see, you always praying and, you know, basically undergoing austerities, but see, sickness is coming to your family. So, I mean, I had to comment on it, and it's a delicate situation because clearly, you know, this is very close to the person, worship of a demigod. So I commented that, well, you know, you're very fortunate. Krishna is very kind by bringing some misfortune. It allows one to become conscious of him. So, you know, there's that. And indeed, in this particular case, the persons are now very eager to hear kirtan and very eager to get darshan of the deity. So unknowingly, they're performing a new kind of austerity that actually is to the proper source and will bring all the rest, and that's what Krishna says, prosperity and well-being. So, yeah, one has to just acknowledge who the proper recipient is of the worship. Here, you have to take this one. Jabaladev, you have to take this one. That one doesn't work.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you for your class. You made a lot of wonderful points. The point I like to focus on and highlight is something that causes problems not in only devotee relationships, but in any relationships in the material world. You were mentioning one of the worst people someone can do to you is ignore you, not acknowledge your presence. This is precisely what the Brahmanas did. And so we see there's so many pastimes where people were ignored, and like Parikshit Maharaj was ignored by Shamika Rishi. Brahma was ignored by Bhrigu Muni. Agastya Muni was ignored by Indra Duma. He cursed him and become Gajendra. So many pastimes where we see, And so one of my favorite pastimes is the Brigham Women pastime, chapter 89. So it describes how we should respond to these circumstances when someone ignores us. And the boys also responded in the proper mentality too. They didn't go back and criticize the brahmanas. They just asked Krishna, what should we do? They didn't try to take things in their own hand. So this is one of my favorite passages in chapter 89 of Krishna book, describes how we should respond to circumstances, because it describes Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. In that pastime, Brigamuni ignored Brahma. He insulted Shiva and he physically attacked Vishnu. And after Brahma and Shiva were insulted, either being ignored or verbally insulted, they tried to take matters into their own hands. But Vishnu, when he was physically attacked by Brigamuni, he started to glorify him. So we see this in our life. I always use the example, Brahma is the creator, Shiva's the destroyer, and Vishnu's the maintainer. So creating our relationships, easy. Destroying our relationships, even easier. Maintaining them, that's the hard part. When people acknowledge us, we have good relationships. When people don't acknowledge us, we don't have good relationships. So how to maintain your relationships? Actually, maintaining your relationships is outside of control, but maintaining your peace of mind is inside our control. So we see that Lord Vishnu, he glorified Brigamuni. And Brigamuni, in return, glorified Vishnu. And so sometimes we hear following the path of the Mahajans, but we also hear that Vishnu is the supreme controller. We may try to glorify people who ignore us, who insult us, and who maybe physically attack us, which is rare. But we may not see we may not receive the same glorification like Vishnu received, because he's a supreme controller. So my question is, or one point, maybe you could expand on one point, just acknowledging and appreciating how the Vishnu responded in the circumstances and how the cowherd boys responded in the circumstances. They never, generally speaking, when somebody ignores us, insults us, or physically attacks us, which is rare, what do we don't speak about Krishna. We speak about this person for days, for hours, for years. And one lesson I learned in the scripture, maybe we could expand on, we see that the great saints, including the cowherd boys, they're spiritual valedictorians, including the wives of the brahmanas. They never criticize their husbands. Why are you so puffed up? Why are you ignoring these cowherd boys? No, they just went about their business talking about Krishna. And so we see that the great saints are spiritual valedictorians. Where does the valedictorian happiness come from? Their happiness comes from them passing their own exam. Their happiness never comes from somebody else passing their exam. So we see Prahlad, the cowherd boys, Vishnu in this pastime, all these great saints, their happiness, they're spiritual valedictorians. Why? Because their happiness comes from them passing their own character exam. Their happiness never comes from somebody else passing their character exam. So as long as we pass our humility, our tolerance, and our forgiveness test, then what difference does it make whether somebody else passed their humility, tolerance, and forgiveness test? Yet we see, you know, sometimes we criticize others. They didn't pass their exam. And I'm so miserable. I've never seen a valedictorian. If you ask a valedictorian, you're valedictorian, you're a straight A student, but why are you so miserable? The reason I'm miserable is because my fellow students didn't pass their exams. But that's what we do we see in these pastimes. People who criticize others for ignoring them, for insulting them, they say I'm a spiritual valedictorian, but I'm miserable. Why? Because they didn't pass their exam. So my question is that we see that maintaining our relationships is outside of control. Maintaining our peace of mind is inside of control. So my question is that what are some steps we could do to give up this tendency to blame others, criticize others? And my question is not clear, but what are some steps we can move forward to become spiritual valedictorians where our happiness is not dependent on other people's passing their characters, and more dependent on us? What are some steps we could do to move forward toward this realization? Anyways, it wasn't very clear, but anyway, I tried my best, so anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because everyone has to confront that so much unhappiness comes from how other persons treat one. So much unhappiness. And you were pointing out that certain personalities don't slide into that unhappiness. They somehow, stay above water, and you identify three criteria that they adhere to, you know, just having humility or being very tolerant, and this helps them to go through some difficulty, like, you know, not being treated well. Well, you know, your question of what one can do to not get bent out of shape if one's not treated well, it's an interesting thing. I've been reflecting actually quite a bit on this recently, not so much getting bent out of shape, but even feeling concerned that sometimes the mind will go with some unhappiness to somebody who's behaved poorly towards one. And so I asked my spiritual master on the retreat a public question. I said, if one, you know, experiences sometimes some sort of trepidation, like you don't want to deal with this person because you know it brings suffering of some kind because there's going to be ill treatment, then is that actually, does that count it as having negativity, holding negativity? Even if one is recognizing, look, there's the hand of Krishna in this, and actually I should see this as the instrument of my karma. So, but is it still a little bit, is one holding on to something negative? Does it count as negative because you're a little bit fearful to have contact with some persons that cause, you know, are causes of some suffering for one's own mind? So he said that it's a symptom of unsteady devotional service, that sometimes you remember, you see Krishna's hand, and sometimes you see the person. So it's just a symptom of unsteady devotional service, because when devotional service is very steady, then one can rise above that that plane of, I guess, argument, or that plane of suffering and feeling like one has been wronged, because one is already holding on so firmly to the lotus feet of the deities that one doesn't get pulled in that direction. So I guess it's like consistently performing devotional service brings one to that point. And then in the meantime, you know, the tendency to engage in argument, that one can control. So the external dealing with the person should not be one of engaging in battle. It's one steps away out of the situation, and then just takes time to write whatever one's conflict is, and, you know, acknowledges what one's own need is. So maybe one's need is to be acknowledged. So then one gives that to oneself, you know. I acknowledge myself. I didn't get it from there, but that's all right. I can give it to myself. I acknowledge that I behaved very well by stepping out of the situation. So definitely the external argumentative thing, that one can control and not be part of. And the thing of thinking and, you know, mulling over the poor treatment, that also one has to control. And the way to control it, really to a large extent, you know, one can actually write, and one can look at what is it that one needs. Is it that acknowledgement? Is it kindness? Is it a loving mood? And then one actually speaks to one's own mind. You have to be able to provide that and strengthen yourself internally, because externally those things, it's unrealistic to think that somebody can fulfill one's needs. It's completely unrealistic. Completely unrealistic. I mean, persons have their own universe and they're functioning in their own little universe, and to think that their universe is now going to also include oneself and all one's needs, it's unlikely. It doesn't work that way. So therefore, one looks to praise to the deity that, you know, please help me to, you know, give this acknowledgement to myself for my particular abilities or my strengths. Allow me to acknowledge that. I don't need to look for it outside. And even if I'm ignored, what does it matter? I'm sharing with you that this is my need. Please help me. So you can share with the deities what your deepest desires are. Yeah, so those are some thoughts. Thank you very much, Ayvalite, for bringing up that very common problem. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Jack.